Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
the ESP 8266. This is the chip of choice for the Internet of Things. This is a thing, a chip that you can put on a thing. It has a Wi-Fi address, a few GPIO, this is digital outputs, and a serial port. And it's the chip, how should I say, the size of a postage stamp, basically, if anyone ever uses those things again. And why am I talking about it? Well, this is a podcast, and dare I say, look, I know very little about it. I know some of the architecture and some of the basics of it. So your basic chip, I've been introduced to it in terms of that I had a wish list of things I wanted on a board which had to have sufficiently flexibility to take sort of second-rate sensors that needed a lot of loving to do it. And so I had the idea of having a group of sensors, and I would now I've got to really think about this, mate. A group of sensors, and I would put those sensors together to form a coherent capsule around a school physics, a school demonstration, such that it would blow open the demonstration. It would be sort of, I don't know, the blitzkrieg of demonstration. So up to the before the blitzkrieg, everything was set piece. You had your artillery, things like this, and this just basically goes through and with support, the idea of communication support, integrated support, everything going together, a full blitzkrieg to mechanize warfare. This is a mechanization of your lesson, proper mechanization, that is. And it's not, you know, they had tanks before, but they're under command of infantry battalion, and it wasn't actually, it was the concept prior blitzkrieg was your corps and the air corps, and blitzkrieg was, let's get the job done, let's get integrated everything together, let's go and go for deep penetration, that is to align the mechanics with the strategy, with the outcome, put them all together in a big hit and just drive through. Now, of course, there's ways of fighting that, but that's the general idea. And so I had to, if you look at the, there's a sensor, and the sensor basically has to be converted to digital. So there's a sensor, and there's a board which converts it to digital. Then that digital, I have a basic requirement that my power supply is a mobile phone power supply, so you can power this up. And the idea is that this power supply would this power supply would be there. So the fact is that I didn't have the money or the inclination to buy separate power supplies for each. So the idea is that this has to be portable. So to be portable, it has to be battery operated. To be battery operated, there's a whole series of things which came across. So the ESP 8266 is integrated as sort of like a, you know, you've got industrial estates where you've got a cake factory, a motor mechanic shop, and a fun park all together. So you bring your kids in for the fun cake thing, you get your car repaired, and you eat some cake, See, this is in precinct, so it's these boards, micro boards, create a basic fun park, and they're expensive. Yeah, you know, like any individual component there would cost, I suppose, $2, and you pay $12 for the whole lot. So if you add the bits, but it's all together and it's all wired up, so you've got the different business, so to speak, all together. And so that was my introduction to the ESP 8266. That was the wireless back end. Then it was sort of an Arduino chip there, which is programmed to GPIOs, and a lithium battery charger. I think that was basically it, and a few LEDs just to tell you things are going okay. And that was the Feather Hazard. And so there's this idea that I can so there are mechanisms. So the idea of getting power around means that the power source had to be centralized. Therefore, if the power has to be centralized, you may as well have everything come back to a bit more of a grunty station and run off a Feather Hazard. However, the ESP8266 is a, basically it's got a Wi-Fi antenna and two or three chips on it, and I think about eight connections to it. And it fundamentally will have a it in it has got enough grunt to do sort of a tiny web page and run a sensor. So if you have a sensor and in a device, you can use the device power supply to run the sensor and the ESP. And so essentially this is the Internet of Things chip. And let us be very wise to say it is now, but what will happen, obviously things will improve, but this is the the buck or $2 convert your toaster or anything to a wireless one. It essentially puts an IP address on, it's a chip with an IP address on it, and the idea is that there's a power bonding, because you've got a powered device, and so the idea of the Internet of Things is that the things are pretty big things that you play around with, and have the power supply there. And once you've got the power supply there, you've got enough to power the sensor, obviously the A to D converter, so the analog output of the sensor, and you convert that to a digital signal, and that may have conditioning on that signal, and it puts it out. So that's the general idea. Now, of course, in the school laboratory, you're going to have all these really large number of sensors around focusing and coordinating on one point. So you could, for each sensor, just have an ESP chip, but you have to get the power to that sensor. So you could either have all of them connected to the power source, so you could plug them into the power source. By the time you plug it into the power source, you may as well just plug in a data line and have the plug it slightly a bit more sophisticated with the data line, or, which is what I've done, or you have a system that they're on a plane, a power plane, and just by simply placing it on the power plane, a plane. So this is configuration for where you can actually build a plane that if you put something down on it, it's automatically powered. Now, look, I don't think it's going to be practical, but I do think I've got the more practical aspect of it. So let's look at the ESP 8266, and in terms of rehab, I've just had to, I suppose, get the fine motor skills in handling solder, stripping wires, and I've sort of spooked myself in terms of that. I was taught electronics by, well, ultimately people who put together radar in World War II. It gives you an idea of how, I'm in my 50s now, and I was taught by people who were in their 60s when I was a kid, so that gives you the idea. And I sort of have, you know, as you go in, you sort of feel unfamiliar with these things, and then you suddenly say, oh, how did my hands know? And you realize that, oh, I must have been taught that very young. And now this is a very small thing of when I suppose the other thing is slowly swapping in, swapping out a decent soldering iron and a wire strip tool. And I'm sure the purists would hate these, but this little it looks like a Tyrannosaurus Rex with its, you know, inner teeth and gums, so it the wire goes in, it gums down, then the inner blades go in, nick the casing and pull it backwards. Now the thing that I didn't even really think about it, I then nicked it to strip say 5 millimeters worth of wire, and then pull back the wire. I'm doing a podcast here, mate. I pulled back the wire, the casing, 3 centimeters. So the casing hasn't cut. This is the insulation hasn't completely come off. In that state, I can then twist the casing in my finger, and this twists the wires just incredibly ready to come off. Now, this is again from someone. There is this tendency to say, look, I want to tin the wires before I put it in because it keeps the wires nice together. You can't cut the wires with the end of the wire with a tin, so with a wire cutter, and cut with a sharp wire cutter. That sort of means that you won't get splaying, especially if you do this winding, that winds very tightly. However, is the idea to turn. Now, there is this problem that if you're building a long-term device, this is not a prototype research device that you want to research and get up, you know, you put it together quickly and then take it apart in a few hours. If you want to build a long-term stuff, tinning a wire to go in a pressure clamp is a nightmare, because what happens is they eventually fail. Just heaps of things go wrong. If you want to, you've got a wire and you want to just put it, solder it onto a piece of a circuit, just temporarily tack it down, what you do is you actually twist the wire in a hook. You've got a little hook wire there. Then you put the solder, and the solder will wet and form a little drop of solder within inside that hook. And then you can actually just place that on the circuit, then melt the little central drop, and it just melts onto the circuit. It's just a really nice way of tacking. And again, I don't know. Again, I was got to tell you about the ESP 8266. And can I tell you, it took me a week of not reading that and not remembering it straight afterwards. And then after a while, I got it. This is a little chip, and what it has is it's got on the left and right, it's got 8 pins. And this is on the microchip. This is not the chip which is in the Hazar. This is a standalone chip. It's got I can't remember what all the pins are. It's got the bottom left and bottom right are the RX, TX, receive and transmit. And so what happens is that it's a master slave thing. You have something which it wants, so that RX, TX can be from the digital output of your device, or it could be from a computer that's right. Then you've got another pin which in there somewhere. So you've got a power pin and a ground pin, so that's 4 pins. Then you've got 4 other pins. One of those pins is, okay, I'm just stopping here because there's some sort of large animal up a tree. Go in here, let's go see what it is. Let's have a quick look. Sorry, I'm walking in the bush at night. I can't see. It's too cold for snakes. What's that? See, now I'm moving my... I've got some reading glasses with the microphone hanging off it. I don't know how good this is. I'm going to improve this. And so, in order to see properly, I have to move the reading glasses down over the top. Okay. So, so the RX-TX is your serial input. In fact, look, your USB cable, your USB-A, is basically a 4-pin device with a ground, a power, and the 2 center points are the RX-TX. It's a serial port. So it's just making your serial more pluggable. And then your USB micro has another wire, which just basically says, is there something connected to me? It just sort of, wake it up, up there. But you're lucky if it's actually, because it's so many things just don't have that wire there. So you build, and you have a cable, and it's only got 4 wires. So this is micro stuff. So this is your thing. Now you've got a pin there to say the command pin, so you can actually store a program, a miniature program, I don't know how much of a program, in this device. And this device then can, on command, read and write to these GPIO pins. So it's not the Arduino, which has got 12, and then it's got analog pins, 8 analog pins and stuff like that, or your Feather Hazar, which has got 1 log pin and I suppose about 12 GPIO pins. It's not that yet. It's enough there to sit there and switch on a LED, open something, driver servo, just drive one servo. So it's very lightweight, and it's got 3.5 volt input. And so what's happening is that the world's going to 3.3 volts, but there's these 5 volts things sitting out there. So there's all this palaver about getting chips to go level shifter to do it. And so you can actually, with one of these things, put it up enough to program it, and then put it on your on the net. Now I don't know. Yeah, I don't think you can. I think you have to. Just strikes me. I think all these things you can't program over the internet. You've got to have a USB port into them and program them via USB port, because the USB thing and a wire can say, I'm now speaking to you as a command. And I think when it's in command, it can't do. And anyway, it's sort of like this waiter which goes around. What would you like to do, monsieur? Today we have this. Oh, thank you. And it takes your orders back to the kitchen. But if you want to actually train a waiter to serve a drink or something, you have to take the waiter off, away from the customers, and do it separately to go through there. So you've got those three wires in there, and essentially you can just have this chip sitting on basically anything. In general, the Arduino board is a thing of choice, but in essence you can have any small thing with this ESP3 over it, and a rather than an Arduino, you can actually connect it directly directly to this board. Cut that out, such that your sensor is reading and writing directly to it, and make it very light. So it makes sense that for these things that you could actually have a sensor. I suppose what you could do, I mean, the sensor has to get power from somewhere, and you know, if it's outside, you have a, you know, those solar lamps, you know, the night lights, but which then switch on. You could just hijack that completely. You have your sensor outside with the batteries. Like, you can buy 10 of those, and you can have it out solar powered. But for a school, I'm just wondering what you can do. It's, you know, sort of one of those things. You know what I think? I get a sort of feeling that you know what I really would like to do is a student uses a sensor, can use a sensor for hours. My sort of feeling to do with it is that you could break things up for a school and use it for an experiment, but not avoid the light pole. Like, you can buy very small light pole batteries. Yeah, it's just the thing about LiPo batteries is that they have to be respected in the way that they're charged. The thing which I get a real sense, I don't know if this is the way, whether you could get one of those ultra capacitors, the new capacitors, and they're not that expensive, and you can store a hell of a lot of energy in those, and the energy demands of these sensors aren't much, whether you could actually have these such the sensors are in a box and they all charge, and you can say monitor the charge on it. I just have a feeling that in this application, so in the thing where you want a sensor up a wall and blah, blah, it's, you can wire it up in a sensor which is outside. She was just out there. Okay, sorry. Yeah, my overall feeling is what I would like to do is actually build these microsensors where there's no cabling anymore. You can actually build them up with the kit, and hook them up to a one of these, I think it's not ultracapacitors, they're called supercapacitors. Sorry for making this noise, my this cable's beginning to pull on me a bit. Just want to pull it up. Oops, okay. Yeah, so I think looking at the ESP, whatever it is, so it's definitely something that if you've got a battery operated device like a $3 multimeter, it is definitely able to be fitted in the back of that, no worries. It's just trying to if you look at it and look at the actual cabling, the display is the display on there is not RX-TX. If I just look at the back of these really cheap multimeters, they've got, you know, easily 12 wires in to their digital, their LCD display. So I'm pretty, I'm just trying to work out the way back up here. I'm pretty sure that they're, can't be hijacked, you know, I used to do heaps and heaps of hijacking back in the day of flatbed scanners. I used to rip those apart and use just as a cheap stepper motor controller, with stepper motor. And so what would happen is that these stores would have slightly old model flatbed scanners, which were thick, and you know, the thin ones came in, so you could pick them up for like $10 and get the stepper motor and all the rails and stuff like that. So I want to do something like that, but I've got a general feeling that at the moment I've got an integrated idea, which is basically a box, and you put everything together. What I think might be doable is where you actually break this up into these tiny little units, and they have. What you really need is 5 minutes to an hour's energy in them, and you want them to charge. You want to tap, charge. So your supercapacitor can definitely do it. So I can see a model in which I want to produce it here. Now I have to keep quiet about some of the other things that I'm just quietly inventing as we go ahead. Okay, so I hope that's a little thing on the ESP 8266. Thanks for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.